From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. There was a time, and it's a time I remember well and fondly, when Saturday morning was a very special time for us kids. Now, this was long before there were several 24-hour kids' networks. This was a time when there were only a few channels. This was a time when I was a kid in a grown-up's world. Now I'm a grown-up in a kid's world. In those days, Saturday morning on television was devoted to kids' programming and serial commercials. There were hundreds of cartoon shows in that era, and the dominant provider was Hanna-Barbera, but there were other studios producing Saturday morning fare as well. And one of my favorites was a studio called Total Television Productions. My guest, Mark Arnold, has written a history called Created and Produced by Total Television Productions, The Story of Underdog, Tennessee Tuxedo, and the Rest. Mark Arnold, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hi, thank you.
Tell me, what are the Total Television Production cast of characters? When people think of TTP, who are the, what are the shows that they've made?
Well, probably the most well-known is The Underdog Show, also known as Tennessee Tuxedo and His Tales, and an earlier show they did was called King Leonardo and His Short Subjects, and probably the most popular character from that show is a series called Tudor Turtle.
Well, that's the one where Tudor was, he had a wizard who was a lizard. Was he a lizard? What was he?
Yeah, he was Mr. Wizard the Lizard, yeah.
And he would send Tudor off. It was not really a time travel. I guess it was time travel. He could go anywhere.
In cases, yes. In certain cases, like he'd be in Roman times or something like that. But in general, he wanted to be, he aspired to be something he wasn't. And that was the whole gist of the thing. I'd like to be a baseball player. And Mr. Wizard says, I think that's not for you. He says, that's what I want to do. And so they'd send him off. And then something would happen eventually in 5 minutes. That would bring him back and say, I've learned my lesson, I'm not going to do that again. Of course, next week he did do it again. So.
And the lizard said, drizzle, drizzle, drazzle, drone, time for this one to come home.
Exactly, yeah.
I love that one. I still get a kind of a feeling of Cocoa Puffs or something when I think about that, because I would sit there and eat cereal watching those shows.
Right.
and of course, Underdog, he was a superhero. Mm-hmm. Wally Cox was the voice.
The one that they chose for that role. They designed Underdog to be, they wanted somebody that was kind of meek and mild, and Wally Cox fit the bill because of his previous acting roles. They said, that's the person we want for this role. So.
Did they have any trouble getting Wally Cox?
Not at the time, because he was kind of between series. He hadn't started Hollywood Squares yet, and he had just come off a series called Hiram Holiday and had done Mr. Peepers in the 50s. And he kept doing movies and stuff like that, but it was just a perfect little window of opportunity that they got to hire him for the show.
What an interesting guy Wally Cox was. You know, he was like, he played this meek and mild milquetoast on TV, but in real life he was Marlon Brando's pal. He used to ride around on motorcycles.
Right, yeah. And they kind of wish they were each other, I've heard. You know, it's like Marlon Brando wished he was kind of more like Wally Cox. Wally wished he was more like Marlon, you know. Go figure.
And then there was Don Adams. Before he did Get Smart, mm-hmm. he was Tennessee Tuxedo. And I think he is, I mean, I think the character of Get Smart is exactly the same as the character of Tennessee Tuxedo.
Pretty much, yeah. But that was a caricature that Don Adams kind of created. He's doing a sort of an exaggerated imitation of William Powell.
Right.
And not so much the Thin Man, but he was in the Thin Man movies. But I found out by watching, if you've ever seen the movie The Great Ziegfeld,
yeah.
That's even closer. If you watch that, you know, he's like a master showman, and it's like, I can do anything, and he speaks in a little short staccato burst, and so Don Adams riffed off that and did a more exaggerated imitation of him, and that's where he got his persona.
Uh-huh. And, of course, this was, as I say, before Get Smart.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And was Don Adams, at that time, a well-known actor or not?
He did little TV appearances, but mainly he was a stand-up at that point. Mm. He did a lot of stand-up comedy at that point.
I see. So I guess those are the shows. Oh, King Leonardo, we talked about the Tudor Turtle, but what was the premise of King Leonardo and His Short Subjects, which is a funny title for a show?
Well, King Leonardo was Total Television's first series, and It was, General Mills was a sponsor of the cereal company. You mentioned Sonny the Cuckoo Bird or Cocoa Puffs or whatever.
Yeah.
They wanted a show to compete with and actually, if necessary, replace Rocky and Bullwinkle, which was produced by the other studio on the opposite end of the country, Jay Ward. And the reason why they wanted a gentler show is because Jay Ward was using spies and espionage and doing kind of adult themes in their cartoons. And they go, hey, we just want a simple cartoon here. So they decided to get some guys that work for the ad agency for General Mills. And their first series they created was King Leonardo, and it had three segments. And the segments were King Leonardo, or King and Odie, and it was just about a frustrated king who had a skunk for a partner. Oh, the king is a lion, and had a skunk for a partner. And the king's brother and this other character called, who was called Itchy Brother, and his accomplice, Biggie Rat, they always play havoc. And typically, King Leonardo's episodes were like four-parters or two-parters, kind of like Underdog was later.
Yeah.
And so it was the cliffhanger thing like that. And the second segment was called The Hunter. And they wanted to cast, they liked, back in the 40s, there was a radio show called Fred Allen Show. And one of the characters was a bombastic kind of senator called Senator Claghorn. And he goes, I say, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, now everybody remembers Foghorn Leghorn, but Foghorn Leghorn was a takeoff on Senator Claghorn.
Yeah, Kenny Delmar, the actor.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when they went around to do The Hunter, we want that character, a Kenny Delmar type. And then they figured out Kenny Delmar actually was in the New York phone book, so they called him up. He wasn't doing anything. So
they got the real Senator Claghorn.
They got the real guy, and he actually was an asset to Total Television. He did many voices after that in all their series.
Uh-huh.
And then the third segment on King Leonardo is like what we discussed, the Tudor Turtle segment. So those were the three main segments that appeared week after week on the initial show.
So this was the ad agency that represented General Mills that launched
right.
the show?
Right. Mm-hmm. And the agency is called Dancer Fitzgerald Sample. It doesn't exist anymore. It's been bought out as Saatchi, and Saatchi is the agency now. But
and this was this was in New York?
On New York, yes.
Uh-huh. So the show was produced in New York?
Yeah.
All the Total Television productions in New York?
Well, as far as where the voicing was done and all the business end was all done in New York. But initially, some of the animation was done in Los Angeles by a company called TV Spots. They did the earliest King Leonardo's. And then all the animation for them and for Jay Ward was shipped to Mexico to a new animation company called Gamma, and that's where the confusion lies, where everybody thinks, oh, Underdog is a Jay Ward show, just like Rocky and Bullwinkle, and then they'd mix and match the segments, too, which made it even more confusing, but they were two separate companies completely. They just shared airtime.
We're talking with Mark Arnold, and he's written a fascinating book called Created and Produced by Total Television Productions, The Story of Underdog, Tennessee Tuxedo, and the Rest, and he's written a lot of other stuff too. He just wrote a book about the Beatles, right? You just did a Beatles thing? We'll talk about that a little bit. So this kind of like it's a Mad Men. It's a spin-off of Mad Men, this whole thing. They were Mad Men who created the
I mean, it's like when we talk about Total Television, that really was the real Mad Men. You know, they were the agency in Madison Avenue, and a lot of these cartoons, I hate to say, would be not done nowadays, were done over martini lunches. And so, a little drunken stupor, I guess, you know, it was like all these fantastic characters that we all grew up with who were created, so.
Now, I remember Twinkles. Where was he from?
Twinkles was not officially a Total Television segment, but it was aired during the original seasons of King Leonardo and later on. And it was a serial that General Mills had.
Yeah.
And back then, they didn't have rules where they do now, where it's like you can't have a cartoon character promoting his own serial and have a cartoon show. But back then, you could. So they said, we have this new serial called Twinkles with an elephant character. Why don't you add some cartoons featuring this elephant? And it went so far back in those days that not only did they have animated segments, they also had merchandising, too. They had toys and things like that in the stores that you could just buy. It's very strange compared to now.
Well, you know, one of the things I noticed about cereal commercials then and now, they never used the word sugar. Every cereal had the word sugar. There were Sugar Smacks,
oh, yeah.
Sugar Pops, Sugar Frosted Flakes. And
yeah.
Now they have just as much sugar, but they never use the word sugar. It's like, that's a dirty
word. That was a banned word. I mean, I remember, I think it's a Sugar Pops ad from the old days. It says, shot with sugar, you know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That was a good thing for you, you know. Here, kids, get your diabetes here, you know. So, yeah, times have changed. A lot of things have changed about a lot of these cartoons. You know, and they've gone back and forth. I mean, they even censored Underdog itself at the time. Fortunately, in recent times, they've reverted back, but he couldn't take his Underdog super energy pill because that was...
An upper?
You know, yeah, that was considered drug-taking. You know, you can't show that on a cartoon, but then... And so I remember seeing, I think in the 80s or something, all that stuff was cut out, and so suddenly it was... Shoeshine Boy, and then he was Underdog, and it's like it didn't really show how he got there.
So you're saying in the later syndicated version?
They would edit the episodes for that. You know, they didn't
to protect children. I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I grew up okay. What the heck?
Yeah. But, well, it made me write books, so I guess that's what it did for me.
But so now, tell me a little bit about the creators. I mean, it's kind of similar to Jay Ward in the kind of humor that you find in Tennessee Tuxedo and
right.
and so forth. Maybe it's, I don't know, slightly different, but it's kind of similar. So who were the people? And were there some crossover creators? And had these creators come from other animation studios or what?
In the case of the four main principal people of Total Television, there's Buck Biggers, and he was the creator of virtually all the characters and the principal writer on the show, and also wrote all the theme songs everybody knows and loves.
Mm-hmm.
He was a closet songwriter and did pretty well. Then he had a buddy named Chet Stover, and he actually wrote the scripts. And he came up with ideas, too. And both of them worked for Dancer Fitzgerald Sample as just ad reps.
They were copywriters. Oh, uh-huh. Ad reps.
Yeah, copywriters, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, kind of similar type of position, I suppose. And then the third person who was also from Dancer was Joe Harris. They pulled him away. Joe Harris was an animator, and he created the Trix Rabbit for Trix Cereals.
Oh, yeah. Trix so, for kids.
Yeah, so they said, we need this guy. And so they pulled him. Then the fourth person was this man named Fred Covington, which sounds like a made-up name, but he's a real person. He lives in New York still. He didn't work for Dancer. He worked for other ad agencies, but he had a big agency background. But he knew the business side of it, so he handled the business side of everything. And he also was in charge of the sound recording. So when they went to the studio to record all the voices, he was in charge of all that.
So if they were working for the ad agency, how did it work? I mean, they were their own sponsor?
Well, initially, as far as how the company got formed, they kind of did it on the sly in the background because, you know, the King Leonardo show didn't take off. Well, they still had their jobs. Once it took off, they just left. But back then, TV shows in general, not just cartoons, usually had a sole single sponsor. And... You know, that goes back to the radio days, you know, Jack Benny, sponsored by Lucky Strike Cigarettes, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you know, something like that. You know, it's really unheard of nowadays to have a show sponsored by a single sponsor. You just have a bunch of ads during a show.
Right.
But back then, the product or the companies, the ad agencies, they would dictate to the networks what they wanted to air. They would go to the networks, hi, we're going to air King Leonardo this season, that's what we're going to air. And they go, okay, and then now it's done a total about face. The networks just decide the show, and then they go and sell the ads to it. So,
What network were they affiliated with?
They actually were affiliated with all the three networks at the time.
Uh-huh.
I have to look up what they started with. I think they started with NBC, if I remember correctly, for King Leonardo.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they started at NBC. So, they had later on branched out and were on CBS for a time, and I don't know if they're on ABC. I don't think they made it onto ABC, but yeah, so they would just waffle back and forth, and sometimes midstream they'd switch networks. It's just, I guess they got a better deal. That part I don't know, to be honest. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And even the creators don't know how that kind of worked out, because you know, I would ask them questions about that, and they go, "Oh, it's so long ago, I don't know." You know. Well, you didn't have that many choices back then. I mean, you had three networks back then. So, I mean, if you're not on one and you get a better deal somewhere else, you just move to the other one. That's about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, so the animators, how many animators worked on the show? Just one? He did all the animation?
Well, Joe Harris did the layouts and he did the storyboards. Now, then they had a team of animators initially in L.A., and probably about 20 to 30 animators. Now, when TV Spots handled it, they were handling other shows that weren't Total Television based. So you've probably seen shows that look similar in style to Underdog. So they just have this overall early to mid-60s look. And there's like Linus the Lionhearted, and there is Calvin and the Colonel.
Yeah.
All these different shows, but none of those were Jay Ward or Total Television, but they had this kind of overall look, mainly because the same animators were working on them. And then when they transferred it all to Gamma in Mexico City, there's about 20 to 30 animators there again, but they worked exclusively with the Total Television and the Jay Ward shows.
My guest is Mark Arnold, and he's written a book called Created and Produced by Total Television Productions, and it's got some fabulous. It's got wonderful text, but it also has great illustrations, samples of scripts, pages of the comic books, Underdog comics.
Mm-hmm.
You must have had fun putting this thing together.
Yeah. It was kind of nerve-wracking when I was putting it together, because when I was interviewing some of the people, I said, "Hey, do you have any animation sales, any production drawings, anything?" And they go, "Oh, I used to have it. I threw it all away."
Oh,
and then, like at the 11th hour, one of the four, Tred Covington, he came to the rescue and says, "I found some scripts." And he shipped them out to me, and they were really yellowing and old, and they were actually crumbling while I was scanning them. I'm like, but I got them in the book. But, you know, if you look at it closely, you'll see, like, pieces off the corners are off and stuff like that. So this is frail stuff. They didn't, you know, none of them had ever thought that 50, 60 years later anybody would even care about these cartoons. They just did them for the time.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose, I guess, you know, just in the same way that the guys who made them for theatrical release in the 30s and 40s didn't think we would be watching them years later, but there's a lot of wonderful things, and I guess a lot of this stuff is out on DVD. I know there's a complete Underdog set,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's a complete Tennessee Tuxedo set.
That's correct, yeah. And I helped out on both of those. Shout Factory had contacted me, and I worked with them very closely to get all the cartoons, and we did for Underdog, the main character, or the main feature, but some of the support features, we were missing a couple, you know, cartoons here and there. And it's just because, you know, the years, the cartoons have exchanged hands so many times, so it's kind of a miracle we got together as good as we did. It's possible to do a better job in some future format, but for now, for DVD, this is probably the best we got.
So it's not exactly watching the whole show, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's as close approximation as you can come to, you know, how it originally aired.
Uh-huh.
There's also bonus features that show, like, some of the original commercial spots. And some of the problems with some of these DVDs is that they get really iffy if they have to add, like, commercials and stuff featured. So, like, there's a Cheerios commercial with Underdog that exists, for example, but we weren't allowed to do it because Shout Factory and Classic Media, the current owners of Total Television, aren't affiliated with the current General Mills, so they probably have to pay him a royalty to use the commercial, and it's all the legal hassles. So,
isn't that crazy? I mean, you're airing their commercial for free. They still, Cheerios is still out there.
I know.
You'd think they'd send him a carton of Cheerios and say, "Hey, thanks."
Exactly. But unfortunately, once you get a lot of lawyers involved, you know, they go, "Hey, we can make a little money off of this." And it's like, okay. And so it's easier just to leave it off, you know. It's unfortunate, but hey.
That's too bad. And how about the Tennessee Tuxedo Box?
Tasty Tuxedo has most of the cartoons. It has all the Tasty Tuxedo cartoons. And then it was filled out with other Tudor Turtle, other Hunter cartoons. I didn't mention other characters. Going back to the Underdog box, it does have all the Go, Go, Gopher cartoons and has all the Commander McBrag cartoons. Those were segments that were originally part of that show.
So now that's an example. Commander McBrag also, I remember he would air on Hoppity Hooper, which was a Jay Ward show, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was a really strange occurrence, but that's because, like I said, General Mills handled the advertising. So they would swap segments back and forth. And as Rocket and Bullwinkle was coming to a close, that also ended the short 30-second segment that they had. They originally had Bullwinkle's Corner where he read poetry,
right.
And then it switched to Mr. Know-It-All where he tried to explain something. And then it just ran its course. So instead of going back to Jay Ward, they went to Total Television. Hey, do you have, it's a 90-second segment.
Right.
And do you have something that can run 90 seconds? And so they decided to turn to the telling of tall tales, and they based the character design on this character from the old version of the Four Feathers. His real name is C. Aubrey Smith.
Right.
He has these really bushy eyebrows and a bushy mustache. And
looks exactly like him.
He talks to it in a bombastic way, and they said, you know, that'd be perfect. Just have a guy saying exaggerated tales to his buddies, and his buddies are bored to tears, but they listen anyway. And then it has a silly resolution, and it's done in 90 seconds. And once they made those, they aired them on Underdog, they aired them on Tennessee Tuxedo, they aired them on Hoppity Hooper, and then once it went into syndication, they got on Rocky and Bullwinkle, they were all over the place.
Right. So, I guess that's as you were saying earlier, that's why people are confused as to who made these cartoons. But I guess when you're a kid, you don't care who made them as long as they're on.
Yeah, I mean, where the idea for the book kind of came from is this voice artist who did the voice of Bullwinkle in the Rocky and Bullwinkle feature film that was more recent, he wrote a book called The Moose That Roared, and it talks about Jay Ward. And Jay Ward's series are Rocky and Bullwinkle, and of course that had Peabody and Sherman and
George of the Jungle.
Well, later he did George of the Jungle, right. And then there's Fractured Fairy Tales, and then later he did Hoppity Hooper, and still later George of the Jungle with Super Chicken and Tom Slick. And
And Aesop's Fables, don't forget those.
And that too, yes. And he just kind of made there was this other studio that produced Underdog and Tennessee Tuxedo, but those cartoons weren't very good. And so it just kind of struck me. It's like, I remember those, and I kind of liked them. What happened to them?
Yeah, they were good. What the hell?
And so I started watching the cartoons, a few on tape, and I was looking at them a little bit closer, and I said, wow, it doesn't even say who makes these things. It only says the voice artist. And so then it was really kind of like a unsolved mystery, or, you know, it was like something the history detectives would probably think nowadays. You know, it's like, who made these cartoons? And I got Joel Harris's name first because he had done some little interview segments on an older Underdog DVD. And then I did some more research, and then that led to the other people's names. And, you know, by calling one, I know him, you know, and I'd get another phone number, and, oh, I know him, yeah. And it's like, it was just like, you know, going down dominoes or something like that. I don't know how to say it, but...
Well, you unsolved the mystery.
Yes, and, you know, I was very thrilled that all of them were still alive and still are, knock on wood, to this day, but they're all in their mid-80s, and I was saying, oh, did they even remember this stuff? And they're all very sharp minds, and, yeah, they remembered a lot of stuff, and I was able to get in the book, so.
That's fantastic. Well, it really is a great book. Now, you are also the author of several other pop culture things that I love. You did a book about Cracked Magazine. And that was like the lesser version of Mad, I guess.
Right. That was an odd story. I mean, when eBay came along, I used to read Mad voraciously. I still do. But I always thought Cracked just kind of sporadically. And when eBay came along about 10, 12 years ago, I suppose, early on, people would be offering these things for like nothing. And I'd get big stacks of them. And I said, I'll complete my set. I didn't see them in the stores, but I found them all online. And I said, wow, there's some good artists in Cracked and stuff like that.
How many issues of Cracked were there?
The initial run, 365, one for every day of the year.
And you have a complete collection, do you?
I do.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then they did a whole bunch of annuals and specials, so if you count those, I mean, there's probably another 400 issues of, you know, other stuff. But the main series is 365, and it ran through 2004. And now it's a website after all this time. But in getting the old issues, I said, wow, there's some actual good artists and writers, and I found out a lot of the people either worked at Crack first and then went to MAD, or they worked at MAD first and then went to Crack, or worked on both. So, you know, there is a kind of an incestuous thing on all these black and white humor magazines, but I was working on the Total Television book, and my publisher said, you know, I think somewhere along the line he was asking me what I should do for the next book, and I think in another conversation I mentioned I had every issue of Crack, and he says, I'd love it if you did a history of Crack. And my initial reaction was, really? Does anybody care? You know? And so I kind of put feelers out. I sent emails. I called a few people. And it's like, even though, you know, some people say some disparaging remarks about it, they all remember it quite fondly, even the people that work there. And then I found out later that there are some voracious fans that really actually prefer Cracked over MAD. You know, go figure. Who knew? And I guess it has to do with, you know, Crack has kind of a sillier attitude, maybe more gentle than MAD. MAD sometimes is a little too close to the bone, a little too political or something like that. And so
maybe more sophisticated slightly.
Yeah. And so, you know, for, you know, people that aren't leaning that way on their taste, you know, there's Cracked. But the thing about Cracked that always was, made it a solid magazine is it always had, for the most part, I think he skipped a few issues, John Severin, who just passed away recently.
Oh, yeah. Great great comic book artist. Worked for EC Comics, and that's how he got into MAD, too, right?
Yeah, he was originally in MAD. He was one of the original artists at MAD, and then after 10 issues, left MAD to edit another EC publication called Two-Fisted Tales after Harvey Kurtzman decided to devote more time to MAD. He created MAD.
Right.
And and then when all those comic books ended, Severin did odd jobs here and there for different comic book publishers, including Marvel, and then made a home at Cracked. And he stayed there during the entire run for the most part, you know, missing just very small amount of issues.
And now also, Mark, you've done a book about the Beatles where you go through each Beatles song and give your opinion. Is that how it works?
That's basically it, yeah. I've been a rabid Beatles fan since the 70s, and I just said, you know, I should do something on, you know, that's very different. It was kind of a personal project on that one. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the Beatles, give their history, but nobody really gives their opinions. Or if they have, they kind of assess it kind of as the status quo way, which is not necessarily wrong, but, you know, sometimes I'll like a song that nobody else does, or somebody, you know, I'll dislike a song that somebody else really loves. And so, you know, I just said, hey, I can give my opinion as well as anybody else about this. I give a few facts, but kind of it's a more personal story, you know, how that song affected me or where I first heard it, or just some interesting fact that I gathered about a particular song that I haven't seen in print. So, yeah, and then I just list what album the song comes from or where you can hear other stuff like it. But I go through everything, group and solo, released and unreleased, you know, all the way through up to like mid last year.
Fantastic. Well, I have to give that a read, and I really did enjoy reading Created and Produced by Total Television Productions. Mark Arnold, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org. I want to thank my guest, Mark Arnold. His book is called Created and Produced by Total Television Productions, The Story of Underdog, Tennessee Tuxedo, and the Rest. Production assistance on From the Bookshelf is provided by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.